It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And once again, we are here in the studio trying to set some kind of a record for consecutive Saturdays here.
Well, we're going to have to break it here pretty soon.
Yeah.
Got a couple of holidays that fall on Saturday this week.
It's amazing. Here we are in year seven of doing this show, and we have never had one of the major holidays fall on a Saturday.
Nope.
It's just bizarre how that worked out. But this week or this year, well, both of the holidays, of course, are a week apart, so if you get one, you get the other one. But we will not be able to broadcast live on Christmas or New Year's Day because, you know, the station's got to have help in here and all that, and nobody wants to. So we'll get a lot done between now and then. There's always tax things that we need to be thinking about, and these days we've got a lot of potential problems, some of which exhibited themselves yesterday. Howard, if you're hanging on through the real estate show, Howard was alluding to the fact that he didn't even want to look at us to see if we'd be miserable. And, you know, it was bad, but it wasn't that bad.
No.
The market can't take the V word anymore. The world is just so on edge. You say the word variant and look out, they run for the doors.
Yeah, I mean, when we all know one thing the market hates, it's uncertainty. And when you hear somewhat sensationalized news stories about this new potential variant, or I guess it's not potential anymore, it's actually a variant. But the fact is we don't know that much about it yet. And but the market tends to overreact. It always does. Look what happened in March of 2019 when they found out about COVID. That was a classic overreaction.
Yep.
And this is the same thing on a smaller scale. And
I just hope we're smart enough as a country not to do what the market fears will do, shut it all down again and stop the economy. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's very bad for people.
I want to say that we're smart enough not to do that, and I think we are.
Define we.
Yeah, exactly.
Outside the Beltway?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think in Florida we're smart enough to know that. But, okay.
You live in paradise.
Yeah, for sure.
One of my, funny you should mention that, one of my favorite headlines that I pulled from this week is from Yahoo Finance. Here's the quote. I think it's a reaction to uncertainty. No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything that goes wrong in the market is a reaction to uncertainty. This guy's not getting any accolades from me on his insight, that's for sure. Hey, but anyway, we digress again. Welcome back to all the regulars. Thanks for always being here. We'll keep coming if you keep listening. And if you're new to the show, whether on purpose or by accident, stick around. I promise you will learn something inadvertently or otherwise. And it is just a real interesting time of year to be doing things about finance. But before anything else, I want to remind people that this is Small Business Saturday.
That's right.
You've done your Amazon shopping for the year now. Pick up your car keys, get out of the house, and go patronize a locally owned business of some sort, even if it could be a bar.
So yeah.
Just drive over to the bar and have a beer and say,
watch some football.
I'm happy it's a small business.
Some great games on today. So,
and it is. So
it's Rivalry Saturday. Get out and go watch some football.
I postpone the market wrap about as long as I can.
Well, I have one more thing. We had Joe's Jog for a Cure this morning. I went out to Nocatee and supported all the racers. We actually had over 120 people racing in person and over 30 more signed up virtually. It was a great event and raised a bunch of money for childhood leukemia research. Really pleased about how it went, and thanks to everyone who supported us on that venture. So
excellent.
Great morning
to hear
for it.
Good. I was in charge of the weather, and people said, don't make it be too hot, so I didn't.
Yeah, you did great.
They didn't tell me don't make it too cold.
Well,
I should have reminded
me. It really wasn't. It was perfect for running.
Yeah,
so.
Good point.
So we can't delay it anymore, but the Dow did drop over 900 points on Friday, and all I can say is thank goodness it was a shortened trading day, because it was pretty ugly. There was really, you couldn't avoid it, though, because it opened down about 800 points. The futures, when I woke up to a text from Steve here on Friday morning saying, here we go again, and he was not wrong, but it was down 2.5% on Friday, and the S&P ended up down about 2.25% each. And despite all of that, the Dow ended the week down just 2%. So
not bad.
If you think about what I mean, that is really almost nothing. My general rule is a 1% week is flat. So anything above that is either up or down. This was just basically slightly down. It really wasn't that bad. It felt horrible, of course, but and if you look at the quarter we're having and the year we're having, it's barely a blip on the radar. It barely changes the numbers. So,
and is it over yet? I will tell you exactly in a month or two.
Well,
once I know.
I think we might know more this week.
Oh, actually, we'll know a lot more this
yeah,
week.
Yeah, we'll see what the reaction is on Monday if the selling has subsided. It really, there wasn't, I mean, it traded between 600 and 1,100 down. So that's a pretty tight range for the day. So it felt like there were buyers coming in every time it got down to about 1,000. And then if it got up to about 700 or 800 down, the seller started stepping in again. So it really not a bad, not too bad, not too choppy. It could have gotten a lot worse, but there were buyers out there at the 1,000 point down level. So,
I was one of them. The dates I promised you. The Dow has not been this low since October 13th.
Yeah,
the Nasdaq and the S&P have not been this low since October 28th.
Yeah, and the beginning of October was really good because quarter-to-date numbers are still pretty strong. I mean, up between 5.8 and 7.3%, depending what index you're looking at.
And for the year, we're just humming along 14%, 20%, 22%
yep.
on the year. And we are headed in, as we said last week, we're headed into the best time for the next few months, and December is usually a winner. Now, we also said last week that Thanksgiving is usually a winner, too. And it usually is. But you don't put the word variant out there without having a repercussion.
Yeah, and it's just I think a lot of it is just that people are thinking, here we go again. Is this ever going to end? And I don't blame people for thinking that. It does feel like that. Not much is known about this variant. It's called Omicron. It's been labeled.
Shouldn't be called Omicron.
No, it should have been G.
G.
Yeah, but they skipped that one for reasons that are political.
Do you think the linkage to China would not sit well in D.C.?
Yeah. So it's been labeled a variant of concern by the WHO. There's speculation that it's in some initial research that says it's possibly more resistant to the vaccines, but it's really not known at this time. Biden is shutting down air travel from South Africa and seven other countries in Africa after calling Trump xenophobic for doing the same thing. Interestingly, Fauci was actually against shutting down air travel, but he was overruled. So that's not the norm. He's normally on the side of caution. So
I'd overrule him.
I do too. I think that it's the right move just because of the uncertainty. But yeah, we really just don't know a whole lot yet. And hopefully next week we will know a lot more about what's going to happen with this variant.
We also got another piece of what I consider excellent news in that in spite of himself, Biden elected to keep Powell around instead of giving the Fed to the woman who will not answer the question, do you prefer capitalism to socialism? She will not answer that question.
Yeah, I was going to get to that next, but that was a really good move by Biden keeping him.
And more right after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are going to finish up the market wrap here in a moment. But first, as usual, a trivia question, and as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Ken at 904-636-7888. Most of you have filled up your gas tank recently, and most of you are probably having a bit of sticker shock. And bad news, it's not over yet. It might ease up a little bit, but it's not over yet because the policies are still wrong. But that's not the question. The question is, in 2008, gasoline prices were higher now. In fact, in 2008, the record was set. What was the inflation-adjusted price per gallon at the peak in 2008?
And that's a national average, I'm assuming? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dollars and cents, and I'll give you a little bit of range, but I won't tell you how much just yet.
All right.
How's that? All right. Honorable mention in the market this week?
The The actual news in the beginning of the week for the market was pretty positive. And it was giving that positive news was giving a mixed reaction in the market. It started the week down because the good news was causing interest rates to rise. That's a trend we've seen quite a few times this year. Whenever there's good news, interest rates start to creep up and the market doesn't like that. So especially tech stocks tend to start trending down. But then also in the middle of the week, as you mentioned, Biden nominated Jerome Powell for another stint as the Fed chief, which was absolutely the right decision. A new Fed chief really could have caused instability.
Especially that one.
That's exactly what the market does not need right now. It did come out during the Fed meeting that they were talking about addressing inflation, and you can sort of read that as potentially raising rates, which fueled interest rate movement early in the week. However, my opinion on rate hikes is still the same. We're not going to see anything until bare minimum late next year, 2022, and maybe into 2023.
Yeah. I didn't believe that for a while, but I do now.
So I think that the Fed talking about addressing inflation is just prepping the market for something that's over a year out. And that's typically what they do. Everyone thought, I believe in 2013, that there was going to be rate hikes, and they didn't happen until 2015. So there's precedent for a long, long run up, a lot of talk before they actually move. And that way the market can sort of digest the news. So that was all pretty positive news. And the market reaction was as you expected. NASDAQ was down a little, Dow was up a little, and then Friday came and all of that was forgotten about because of the scare that we saw with the new variant. So,
and you know, it's going to spread faster. It's going to kill more people.
Of course.
The sky is falling.
Of course.
Except for one thing. We don't know any of that.
No, we do not know any of that. That's true. And some of these variants don't act the same in one country or place as they do in another. It depends on, it seems like, a variety of factors, including weather, climate, that type of thing. So we'll see what happens. It's way too early to guess at these things.
Oh, by the way, I gave the dates, and don't worry about this little thing. It might go down further. Monday morning might be ugly.
That hasn't been the trend with these types of pullbacks during COVID, that they tend to bounce back pretty quickly, but that is in no way saying that that's what's going to happen next week.
Is this little thing the start of a correction? I will tell you, and I'll tell you precisely, but not for a few weeks.
It was interesting, too, because there was really nowhere to hide on Friday. Yeah. If you were in Bitcoin, you lost 5%, that's not an exact number, but it just seemed like everything was down. And, in fact, Bitcoin actually touched on a bear market this week. Yeah, down 20% from its recent high. So, there really was nowhere to hide.
No, even my gold and silver didn't treat me well.
Nope.
Darn it.
We saw some real estate data released this week, and while existing home sales beat expectations, new home sales actually missed expectations. You really have to dig into this data to find out what's going on, though. New home sales increased by 0.8% in October, but are down 5.8% from a year ago. The median price continued to rise, hitting $353,900, up 13.1% from a year ago.
Heady stuff there.
The number of listed but unsold homes in the U.S. was 1.25 million in October. That's the lowest on record dating back to 1999 when this report started. This shows that buyers continue to struggle to find inventory to buy despite higher prices. They're willing to pay the higher prices. They just can't find a house to buy. The months of unsold homes stayed steady at 2.4, which is near record lows. New single-family home sales increased in October by 0.4%, but that was below expectations. There are now 6.3 months of unsold new homes, up from 6.1 months. That sounds like good news, but most of those homes are not completed. So there is only 0.6 months completed supply on the market, the lowest level on record since 1999.
Wow.
The average price of new homes was $477,800, up 21.1% from a year ago. Several previous months were also revised down in this report, and the total number of single-family homes under construction is at the highest rate since 2007, but it can still barely keep up with demand despite people willing to pay the higher prices.
Look at interest rates.
So everything in this basically says that people are buying homes like crazy and can't find what they want despite being willing to pay more. The only other real data point of note was that GDP was revised up to 2.1% for the third quarter, just missing the estimate of 2.2%. The original reading was 2.0. There were upward revisions to consumer spending, inventories, and government purchases. The GDP price index was revised up to 5.9% from 5.7%, much to no one's surprise. Inflation, inflation, inflation.
Yep, you got that right.
So, yeah, it was a sort of a light week of data, but most of it was
positive.
I mean, it was pretty good. Yeah.
Nothing on balance, it was quite good. I think there's some things that are not going to shake loose until early next year. But people, let's face it, people aren't really going to work the rest of this year. You go into the office and talk to people, but nobody goes to work except us.
There were some pretty positive reports coming out of Black Friday, too. The stores weren't as crowded or crazy, but a lot of online shopping apparently up double digits over last year, 10-12% range from the early reports that I saw. So that would speak well for a good holiday season of shopping and spending. So I have not changed my forecast for the rest of this year. I still think it will be good. Now, this new variant obviously is a X factor that we cannot really predict what will happen with. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah. People have this money hanging around. I just told Adam a little bit ago before the show started, Geraldo Rivera came up with a term this past week that I almost fell off my chair. I was laughing so hard. They were talking about all the demand and the inflation and so on. And he said, well, homes have gone up so much that people have all this pent-up equity.
Just waiting to be spent.
Pent-up equity. So here's what apparently you're supposed to do as an American. When you find out you're worth more than you thought, you take it out and spend it rather than accruing to your net worth.
I mean, historically, he's not wrong. That's what we do.
That it is pretty much true.
Not what we would recommend, though. We would recommend actually not spending that equity and keeping your net worth higher.
Yes. You will be a better credit risk and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people will be people. And
that is correct.
You know everybody's dying to get their stuff right now because we've been fed all the stuff about supply chain problems and empty store shelves. And seriously, people, it's not that bad out there.
No.
Are there some things that are missing?
Absolutely.
Everywhere you go.
But it's like rolling outages, sort of like the California blackouts.
Exactly.
It's you go into a store and one day there's just something random that's out. Next week it's there, but something in the neighboring aisle is out, and there's really no rhyme or reason to it from what I can tell.
We were at TJ's earlier this week. I can't remember what it was, but one of the store employees said, we can't get anything that has whatever it was in it. I can't remember what it was. It just so random that that particular thing would be so hard to get. It's just crazy.
And I did see an article saying that Christmas trees are going to be stocked out. And I think they cause these situations by putting out these articles and getting people worried. So then everyone goes out and buys a Christmas tree at the same time.
That's the old Johnny Carson routine. For those of you who are a little more seasoned than some of us here, you remember on the Tonight Show quite a few decades ago, and Johnny Carson made a joke about a toilet paper shortage in L.A. And the next day, there was.
That's crazy.
And people went out and bought, and he actually caused it. And he was amazed at his own powers. It was pretty funny. Of course, it corrects itself shortly because then they all stop buying. But we've had that. You know, since COVID, we've had a lot of those things like that. I can't say that we didn't participate. But anyway, things are a lot better off out there as far as retail shopping than they could be. One thing that will never happen, and you could fix this whole thing overnight practically, at least in terms of a big economy, it would be overnight. Start the pipeline, resume the drilling, and hold the lease auctions again. Get some oil into this market, not by releasing it from our strategic reserve, which is hard on the national safety, but because we're the biggest producer in the world, and with a marginal amount that we could produce would make us independent again. All those people who hate us, who are taking our tens and tens and tens and hundreds of billions of dollars, it would all be solved. But since that's the one thing that just isn't ever going to come true for a while, we better get used to paying some more money. That's about all there is to it. All right, much more fun stuff on the other side. We won't talk about the market and all that stuff anymore for a while. So we'll get up to some fun things. Adam's got a millionaire and so on and so forth. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. If you have a financial question or a comment, please give us a call. We'll ask you how your Thanksgiving was. We're still just kind of sitting here suffering from having overeaten so much, which means it was a smashing success.
Yeah.
The way I see it. All right, a reminder, trivia question still open. What was the inflation-adjusted price of a gallon of gas on average when it peaked in 2008? And it's more than $3.40. Now, that doesn't help you. What will?
It's a good start.
Uh-huh. Want to talk about a millionaire? A successful person who didn't always get a good start, but has utilized the American system and used it well.
Yeah, this one you're probably going to know right when I start talking about her, because it's just, there's just no way to hide who it is. but this segment is really about realizing the American dream. As I've gone through, this is the 15th millionaire I've profiled that started out poor and made something of themselves. There's some luck involved in all these stories, but the mainly it's that either they had a great idea or an incredible work ethic or both. And you'll see what I mean after I get into this story. But she was born in 1946 in a one-room cabin as the fourth of 12 kids, which made for a different kind of childhood for this millionaire. Her father was illiterate but very smart and managed to make a living in rural Tennessee by sharecropping and doing construction jobs. Despite living this way, her childhood was actually very happy. Her family had immigrated from Wales a century earlier. They were very religious, musically inclined, and loved to tell stories of Smoky Mountain folklore.
I know.
Despite being happy, they were dirt poor. By age 6, she was performing in her grandfather's church, and by age 7, she learned to play a homemade guitar. At age 8, her uncle saw her talent and bought her a real guitar. By age 10, she was performing on local radio stations in East Tennessee. And by age 13, she recorded her first song. The day after graduating from high school, she moved to Nashville. She found some success as a songwriter along with her uncle. Two songs she wrote were top 10 hits, Bill Phillips' Put It Off Until Tomorrow in 1966, and Skeeter Davis's Fuel to the Flame in 1967. Even Hank Williams Jr. recorded one of her songs during this time. In 1965, at age 19, she was signed by Monument Records as a bubblegum pop singer. She recorded a bunch of songs, none of which made the charts. She frequently requested the chance to record country music, which she was finally allowed to do. Her first two country singles made the top 25 of the country charts, and a star was born. In 1967, she joined up with Porter Wagoner for a weekly spot on his syndicated TV show. They released a string of top 10 duets over the next 6 years. In 1971, she released Joshua, which was her first number one hit. Over the next decade, she released song after song that went to number one on the charts, more than 10 total during the decade. The next stage in her career was to make country music more mainstream. She did this by recording with a bunch of pop stars. In 1977, she released Here You Come Again, which topped country charts and reached number 20 on the pop chart. Her next song reached number 3 on the pop chart. During the later 70s to the early 2000s, she continued to have musical success after musical success and started appearing more frequently on television and eventually in movies. Today, she has 25 of her single or album releases reach gold, platinum, or multi-platinum. She has 26 number one hits on the Billboard country charts. She has won 11 Grammy Awards, 3 American Music Awards, 10 CMAs, and 7 of the Academy of Country Music. She was also nominated for 2 Academy Awards, a Tony Award, and an Emmy Award. She has a star on the Hollywood Boulevard in California. She is in the Country Music Hall of Fame. Reading this woman's biography makes me wonder if the woman ever slept, but she's also been incredibly charitable in her life. Her work with literacy supports almost 850,000 kids across the U.S., Canada, the U.K., Australia, and Ireland. The charity has sent out more than 100 million books, and she has been nationally recognized for her work to fight illiteracy. From humble beginnings in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains, sharing a tiny cabin with her family of 14, to one of the most successful country recording artists of all time, Dolly Parton is a true American success story.
Huh.
Pretty solid.
Yeah. Well, our old saying around where I come from is everybody likes her.
Yeah, pretty much.
How can you go through life without making enemies? That's incredible.
Yeah, I didn't even really get into her acting career just because I ran out of time and there were so many accomplishments during her life. But
9 to 5 was terrific.
Yeah, it's just amazing that a woman born dirt poor in the foothills of Tennessee could become a multimillionaire through doing what she loved.
Talent and hard work.
Yep, no doubt about it.
Nice. All right. Looking at the few minutes left before the break, I thought, got a couple things I really want to do, but you hear me complain frequently about people who write newsletters and how they sell them, and they're almost always selling fear and disruption and on and on and on. Well, Harry Dent is certainly no exception. You've heard me talk about him before. This is specific to him only in that it just happened. I can do it about anybody, and I'm not trying to pick on anybody. I'm trying to educate you as to what goes on. So Dent is a newsletter salesman, period. That's what he does. That's how he makes his money. But he loves to predict things. He loves the sound of his voice and the look of his face on television and on and on and on. I guess a lot of us could be accused of that, but that I digress. In July, I did this. I brought it up and told everybody what he was writing in July. And I said, I'm going to keep that in my files because one of these days, I'm going to call him out. And here we go. First thing he said from July 7th, we're in a deflationary period like the 30s. Okay. July 7th to now, deflation. Homes are 50% overvalued. And they've gone up how much since then?
Wow.
3, equities have no place in portfolios right now. At the time, the Dow was at 34,577 and has risen 3% since that time. Number 4, absolutely sell your stocks. They could go down 80% by September or October. Number 5, utilities will go down 50%. 6, we have a megaphone pattern like the 60s and 70s. I don't even know what the heck he's talking about.
I don't know what that is either.
7, Bitcoin is going down to 115. It was over 33,000 at the time.
And now it's 53,000, I think.
Yeah, he said it'll drop 90% to 95%. And at the time he wrote this, a 95% drop would still have left it 4 digits long.
Whoops.
Uh-huh. Number 8, this will be the biggest crash of our lifetime. Number 9, he told the reporter in March that the crash would come by June. And when called upon about that one, he said, well, I blame the government stimulus. Well, what do you expect? Government's not going to put stimulus in the economy? Number 10, hyperinflation is not going to happen. Jury's out on that one. Now, he gave the same reporter an update on November 21st. Number 1, the biggest crash of our lifetime will happen by the end of 2022. Seems to have gotten pushed back a bit, doesn't it?
A bit, yeah.
2, we'll have the biggest recession or even depression, and the market will only recover when it's over. He says he correctly called the 1989 Japan market crash, the dot-com crash, and the election of Trump. By my count, that's 3 wins out of several hundred predictions.
Probably over 1,000.
Probably. 4, the market will plummet 80%. I've heard that somewhere, too. 5, the first 2 months of 2022 will produce a fall of 50%. I'll let you know on March 1st, folks. 6, the economy is slowing and will go to sleep and pass out, dropping like a rock. 7, the economy is dead. 8, the S&P 500 will go to a range of 2,000 to 2,200. 9, be out of stocks by Christmas. 10, stocks will go higher in December, so don't sell yet. The crash will be greater than 1930 to 32. GDP growth will be zero by early 22. Why is the economy slowing? Here's the reason, folks. It's worn out.
Worn out.
Worn
that's,
out.
That's a technical term.
Right? It must be, because he said it. And then he says, gold is not going to be a safe haven because it won't do well in a recession. But if you've got a balanced portfolio of stocks and bonds, you should put 5 to 10% gold in it.
Okay.
You getting the picture here, folks? You can read anything you want to read. You can listen to anybody you want to listen to. But getting good advice, that is a different story. All right, we're going to pay some more bills one more time before we come back. Then we've got some more fun stuff. We'll just see what happens. Do not go anywhere. There's so much fun to be had yet. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And a reminder that our trivia question is still out there. What was the inflation-adjusted price of a gallon of gas in 2008 when it peaked in inflation-adjusted terms? And we know it's above $3.40 because that's where we are. All right. Everybody who has much of anything. Oh, sorry. We have a caller coming in. Until it's set up. What I'm going to do, and I might get started on it today, I might get it finished today, but there are 16 things that you should do before you die that fall into the realm of estate planning, that part of financial planning. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Recovering.
Yeah, me too. I ate too much.
Yep.
I don't know if I missed it before. Did you talk about oil? I bought some UCO on Friday, and it was about down about 20%, $20. And what do you think about that?
What's the symbol, UCL?
UCO.
And that's the one that's tagged to the price of gasoline?
Yeah.
I think it has a good chance of going up.
Yeah, I think that's
what I...
A good
That's
call.
What I was thinking. Uh-huh. But
those tracking indices, though, are very difficult to make money on. They're trading are. Vehicles. Don't think mm-hmm. you're going to hold it for a year then get rid of it. Pick
an exit. Trade on it. I was hoping that it might go up on Monday or Tuesday or next week or something.
It wouldn't surprise me. The drop was, of course, caused by the announcement of releasing 50 million barrels.
Yeah. No, I think it was more the variant shutting down global air travel and trade. And I think it's a vast overreaction to the variant news. And I think that was probably a good call. That doesn't mean it won't drop a little bit more next week. Right. But I think if you hold it for a decent amount of time, you could see a return on it.
Yeah. Just be watchful at all times, because there might come a day where something goes just exactly right and it jumps up. And if you can be on the ball and nail it, you pick up a few bucks, you know, a very short time period.
That's what I plan on doing. I'm just going to watch it, and as soon as it goes back up, then I'll sell it.
Yeah, no guarantees, but it doesn't seem like a bad strategy.
No, it's something, quite frankly, that I would do.
Yeah,
does that make it good or bad? No.
I also will guess on the trivia.
Sure.
How about $3.30?
It's above $3.40. I'll give you one more shot.
$3.60.
All right, that's too low, but it raises our bracket a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, good. I appreciate your phone call. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and it's time now that we can start saying Merry Christmas and Happy New Year and all that stuff, at least a little bit.
Yeah, and good luck with your trade.
Yep.
Okay, thanks a
lot. Let us know if you hit.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Team Financial Gurus of Northeast Florida and the globe.
It's Phil
from Orange Park here, and I want to wish you a not only a blessed, good holiday Christmas after Thanksgiving season, but I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the good that you two guys do every day, even behind the scenes that most people don't know about. And I want to take a guess. My health is a little better.
Good.
I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to say four. I put my thinking cap on for this one. Mm-hmm. I want to say $4.34 a gallon. However, if I do come closer, when we'll just regift it to somebody else.
Well, don't worry about that. You're not close enough. You're still too low.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. And okay. And last week, Larry did appreciate you gifting your heart to him.
Yeah. So. Not any problem. But you two are going to get a special gift. I'm working on finding out when and where your Christmas party is so I can have Secret Santa deliver something to you guys.
It's in our heads.
Not a problem. And 10 years ago, I finished all my South Africa investments, which really paid off well.
Good.
Even before 08 and 09. And I am so glad because, well, we all know what happened this week. And
yep.
There's no answer to how it happens, but it happens, and who knows what the next door brings, you know?
The name is individual country risk.
Yeah, for sure. And I told the pension funds that I were involved in more than a decade ago, be careful on the international, be careful on where you go and what you do. And actually, the gurus of your caliber smiled because that was their advice already in the packet that they already said.
Absolutely true. Thank you so much.
I'll let you go and take care and hope to be able to call in next Saturday.
Well, I hope you can.
We do.
Have a good one.
Take care.
434 is too low. It's starting to get the picture out there. Huh?
Yeah. Remember, this is inflation adjusted, so it's in today's
dollars.
That's
right. Mm-hmm. And most of you are aware of some very wealthy people that died, and probably quite a few of you know that they were intestate, which simply means they didn't have a will. Notable is Aretha Franklin, who was worth more than a little bit, and Prince was another one.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not picking on singers in particular, but these were notable large estates that were not directed by a will or a trust. And that's something that you don't want to find yourself. It's a position in which you don't want to find yourself, because the court will take over, and courts tend to make decisions that don't really have a lot to do with who you like and dislike and all of that stuff. They're pretty much just mandated by the confines of the law that they're in. So key takeaways here, the things that you should remember, there's more to estate planning than just making a will. You need to account for all your assets and need to know that they're all directed to go to the correct place if you want your way. Keeping written lists and hopefully giving a copy of it to you or whoever your administrator is, whether it's designated or if it's going to a lawyer or a court or whatever, you want to keep that up to date. And this time of year is a particularly good time to talk about beneficiaries, because a lot of things happen. And before the end of the year, a lot of people have made changes that might affect their personal relationships. Some people have other people pass away that would be on their beneficiary list, and especially at a time when we have lost a lot of people to COVID and so on. So pull out your beneficiary designations and look through them and see if anything needs changing. That's a good head start. All right. Itemize your inventory. How many of you have a decent idea of what all you have in your house? Probably not that many. It tends to accumulate a lot, and it happens faster than decumulation for most of us. We're kind of inherently pack rats. It's important to have some kind of a list. And what we've been doing for the last few years is whenever we buy anything of any consequence, we scan. In fact, basically it's anything. We scan the receipts for it. So out there in the electronic world is a copy of all the stuff that is in our house, except for the really old stuff, and that we list separately. But do that. You'd be amazed how much stuff you've got. Plus, your kids will thank you if you go suddenly and they come in and they don't know what's valuable. That can be a problem. All right. Follow up with non-physical assets. Counting your physical assets is one thing, but there's a lot of non-physical, i.e. Digitized asset work out there, things that you've accumulated in your life just from being online and that sort of thing. And it includes things like access to your bank accounts and your retirement accounts, but it's also Facebook and whatever else you might be on. And you need to designate what you want to happen with those things, just like you do with your tangible physical assets. Make a list of your debts. Hopefully it's a short list, but won't always be. But wherever you owe money, you're going to want those payments to be directed if something happens to you, and people have to know how to get that done. Now, if it's just a mortgage, fine. If you're debt-free, that's fine. But it's very important because you might get things repossessed inadvertently out of your estate if you don't play your cards right. That would be bad. Memberships in anything. It could be country clubs. It could be the American Legion. It could be anything that you might have joined along the way. Those organizations need to know if something goes wrong with you, and they are in possession of things and knowledge about you that might want to have somebody else follow up on and get back. There's always the making copies of the list and making a complete list, and those things have to be in a place that's not your safe deposit box. You've got to have a place in your house. You've got to tell people about it. Here's my letter that tells you what everything is, where everything is, so that you can get it done. Because let's face it, sometimes you are not really looking forward to shuffling off the mortal plane as early as you actually do. I got more on this for next week, but no time to handle it now. But just start thinking about that. Year end is a great time to be thinking about taxes and getting organized and all of that stuff. So we'll harp on it a little bit more in a week. Same time next week. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving. This is the Banway Financial Hour.